I would not be surprised that if we would talk again in 10 years or so from today, that we find out that the total volume that's being moved is probably a bit higher than what many people anticipate at this point in time.
Straight Talk with Rolf Habben Jansen.
So Rolf, welcome back to the second podcast and great to talk to you again. How have you been? Has it been another busy month?
I've been good. Yourself? It's been a busy month as always. You know, things keep surprising us every now and then. But I mean, at least not too many new things over the last month or so.
Well, I've been reflecting. Do you realize that it's exactly 70 years since the birth of containerization, when Malcolm McLean first thought of loading ocean cargo into metal boxes back in 1956? Since then, growth has been phenomenal, with the equivalent of 192 million 20-foot containers transported on 6,000 ships in 2025, another record year. So it's been an incredible seven decades since then, hasn't it?
It has. I think if you think about it, I don't think that Malcolm McLean thought that the impact would be so big of what he came up with, because it was a fairly simple idea, but in the end, it's really transformed global trade.
Well, totally transformed it. And I was just thinking, those few hundred boxes moved back then, now you've got ships of, what, 24,000 TE or 20-foot equivalent units. I gather that last year was another record year with something like almost 200 million maritime containers moved on something like 6,000 ships. So the growth has been absolutely phenomenal, hasn't it? But the problem now, with international trade being disrupted by tariffs, sanctions, blockades, attacks on shipping. So the question is this era of globalization over? What do you think?
It's a good question. And I think it's something that, you know, keeps a lot of people busy for a long time. But I think it's for sure not over. I think we see globalization in many areas, not only when it's about trading goods, but certainly also when it's around data and services, where it becomes easier and easier to do things internationally. Of course, you then sometimes see a little bit of a counter reaction. But on the other hand, if you also just look at the last couple of years, I mean, despite everything that has happened, I mean, global trade has continued to develop very, very well. I mean, if I go back 2.5 years and look at where we are today, then I think everybody would be really surprised about, you know, the amount of growth that we have seen. And that was definitely not predicted. So I don't know how you see it, but I'm actually still quite optimistic about that.
So, I mean, I've always thought container shipping was a fantastic way of spreading prosperity around the world, but presumably you're seeing different trade patterns now, are you? I mean, can you say something about how trade may be changing in response to all these other external impacts that you're seeing?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you just see that trade flows change and you still see new trade flows coming up. I mean, if you're traveling around places like Africa or India or even some parts of Southeast Asia, you still see a lot of goods that can be containerized. Yeah. And I mean, just look at what happened over the last 25 years in China. Yeah. I still think there are other parts of the world where we will see a similar development, maybe not at the pace that we've seen it in China, but certainly also a lot of growth potential still out there. So I would not be surprised if we fast forward 10 or 20 years that we are still looking at a global market for containerized transport that's a lot bigger than what it is right now.
I assume the ships aren't going to get much bigger though, are they? Have we seen the maximum size?
No. No, I think there's, you know, I don't think the ships are going to get all that much bigger. I think, you know, the incremental benefits of going much, of building much bigger ships are just not so high. But I think that, you know, what you see when you look at global trade, I think there's a number of things that people just don't always keep in mind. I mean, maybe just to name two, and maybe we can spend a little bit of time on that. I think one of them is just trade imbalances. I think trade imbalances continue to grow. And that also means that some of the numbers that people typically look at when they look at global trade growth don't give you the full picture. And I think the second one, which we have seen especially in, I would say, not this decade, but in the last decade, is that people have become a lot more efficient in the way that they package goods. And because of that, you know, maybe trade volume growth has not been so significant, but we've actually still seen a lot more cargo moving. So for me, those are two of those things that people don't always look at with the right perspective.
Just going back a little bit to the situation with the United States. I mean, I covered container shipping for many years, and it's always the US consumer that was the driving force. Americans just love shopping. And so they were the ones that are bringing in all the trade. And so the rest of the world sort of was driven by that. So are they still shopping as much? Are they still buying as much from what you're seeing in terms of cargo, inbound cargo? And is it still coming from China, or are you just seeing a diversification of sourcing?
I think when you look at the US, it's certainly still a very big consumer market. I mean, the Americans, I think, will, you know, they will keep shopping as they have always done. And a lot of that stuff will still need to come from abroad because they don't manufacture it at home. So I think we'll continue to see a lot of cargo being moved into the US. But when you look at growth across the globe, you know, then it will have to come from different markets. I think if you just look at a continent like Africa, right, you have 800 million people compared to the 300 something in the US, and the cargo that flows into Africa is a fraction of what goes into the United States. India, pretty much same story. And I think we all underestimate a little bit how much these people will also consume if we fast forward 30 or 50 years. And a lot of that will have to come from somewhere else, and a lot of that will be brought in steel boxes.
So as trade appears to be, what you're saying, it's sort of getting more fragmented or fracturing in some respects. Are you still seeing the US dollar as the principal currency in which everything is charged, or are people using other currencies, particularly for freight rates, not so much for other costs or charter rates, but are freight rates still in dollars, or are they in other currencies as well?
No, I would say that in our industry, you know, US dollar is still the functional currency that everybody uses. I also think that's not going to change anytime soon, at least not based on what we see.
Yeah, I know in the past there have been attempts to charge freight rates, say, in euro, but presumably never came to anything.
I mean, in some places, I mean, there is the occasional rate in a different currency, but the vast majority is still being done in dollars, both on, I mean, fuel is in dollars, charter rates are in dollars, a lot of terminal rates are in dollars. So I don't think that's going to change fundamentally anytime soon.
Going back to what you said a while ago about production, there's been a lot of talk over the last few years, as you know, about nearshoring. Is that actually happening, or is it just talk as far as you can tell?
Well, it's probably a bit of both. I mean, I think you and I both know that this whole discussion on, you know, changing sourcing patterns is not new. If I go 15 years back, there were a lot of people already talking about diversification away from China. We still hear talk about that today. And for sure, places like Vietnam and Indonesia have grown faster than China. Yeah. I think that's very, very clear. As far as, say, nearshoring is concerned, I mean, Mexico, if you look at it from a US perspective, Mexico certainly does a lot more these days than it did 20 years ago. But if you really look at how much manufacturing has moved back to the United States, for example, or to Germany, for that matter, there are probably some examples, but in the overall scheme of things, that's still not a lot.
But from a point of view of a container line like Hapag-Lloyd, when you see things, I mean, in the past, it was all traditionally just the big trade was Asia to US, Asia to Europe, and the transatlantic, not quite so big, but still quite important. Now it's getting much more complicated, much more complex. Presumably that's quite a good thing, isn't it, from your point of view, from a shipping line's point of view?
It might be more difficult. Of course, it's a good thing for a shipping line. Yeah, it's a bit more complex. But the good thing is, of course, that we can send ships anywhere. I mean, whether the ship needs to go to the US or to South America or to Africa, in the end, that does not make that much of a difference. Of course, for some ships, especially the very big ones, there are some limitations because they can't call everywhere. But with infrastructure in places like India, Africa, and South America continuing to develop, I think that those challenges will become smaller in the next 5 or 10 years.
You just mentioned about ships. I mean, obviously, the really big ships are only designed for one big trade, the Asia-Europe trades. So are you having to think about more specific ships for certain areas such as port facilities and like cranes? Do you have to think in terms of the port facilities when you're trying to open up new markets?
I think many of our technical people would say yes, and I would probably say no, because, you know, if we buy a ship today, then we need to buy a ship that we're going to use for 25 years. It will probably be delivered in 3, 4, or 5 years. So you need to think several decades out. And when I look at the developments that we see in infrastructure in many places, then a lot of markets will be able to take 15, 17,000 TEU ships. So as long as you don't go much beyond that, I think you're going to be good. And yes, that may give you some limitations in terms of deployment in the first couple of years when you have the ships, but over two and a half, or looking at it over two and a half or three decades, I think that's pretty unproblematic. I mean, if you go back, just go back, right? I mean, you've been in this industry also for a long time. I mean, go back 10 years or 12 years and look at what the biggest size was that we had out there. Nobody would think that the 24Ks could be handled in pretty much any port in Europe and in Asia. And I think that's the way to look at it when you have to take a decision now. Don't only look at what's already there today, but really look a little bit further out.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say just now. I still remember when the first 6,000 TEU ship was launched by your partner line, and the excitement, and you know, people were just in awe of such a huge ship. And then it went up to 8,000, 10,000. And it was just inconceivable then, I think, that ships could get the size they are now. And, you know, when you see them.
I mean, I still recall when I was at Netloyd and it just started in my career, we had a new ship series, which was called the UCC. It was called Ultimate Container Carrier. And everybody was convinced that was going to be the biggest ship ever. Yeah. It was 5,600 TEUs.
Yes.
It was a very nice ship. You know, it's a very nice ship. Yeah. But so that's how things change. And whenever you take decisions on investing into new assets, this is the way to look forward. It's the same when you look at ports.
No, exactly. And following up on what you're just saying about new markets, whether it's in Latin America or Africa or other parts of the world, you feel confident that these markets can be really developed and perhaps compensate for if we're seeing a slowdown in growth in the US or in Europe, perhaps there's still scope there for further container growth.
Absolutely. We can debate about how much that exactly will be, but just look at the growth that we have seen into Africa over the last couple of years. I mean, it's been well into double digits every year. Yeah. And I think when you look at India, I mean, we invested quite a lot of money into India. I've been traveling around there for a fair bit. I mean, you see so many goods that can still be containerized. And nobody knows at which pace this is going to happen. I would agree to that. But if we take decisions with a 25 or 30 year horizon, and this is all definitely going to come. I mean, just go 25 years back and look at how much containers were moved in and out of China. I mean, compared to today, I mean, that difference is just gigantic. Yeah.
I mean, on China, obviously China traditionally has been this huge export market, but with a growing middle class, are you seeing imports, are they really hoping to drive the market, the global market as well, Chinese consumers? Are they ever going to be as enthusiastic about shopping as their American equivalents?
Well, I cannot judge how enthusiastic the Chinese will be, but of course we've seen a lot of people moving into middle class, and when you walk around in China, it's not that they have no shops. Right? I mean, there's a lot of people out there buying all kinds of stuff. That doesn't take away that for China, export is still super important. In looking at the last couple of years, I mean, the export out of Asia has grown at an unbelievable pace. And I think that also illustrates a bit how difficult it is to predict in this market what's really going to happen. I mean, I've always been very optimistic about the growth potential. And going back to the two things that we talked about earlier, I mean, everybody talks about, you know, overall growth in container traffic, but it's all about what is the growth on the dominant legs. Because if you look at the growth on the dominant legs, that determines how much capacity is required. If you look at the last 3 years, 24, we saw 10% growth on dominant legs. In 25, we saw 8%. And this year, we are again at 4.5. If you look at that compounded, we are at 24, 25% in a three-year period, which is way above what anybody had expected. And that's also why you see today that there's not a tremendous amount of overcapacity. I'm not saying that there cannot be overcapacity in this market because, you know, we've all been around for long enough. But right now, there is actually not a lot because of that strong growth. And I think a lot of people have just underestimated that. And now let's see what happens in the upcoming couple of years. But I'm not too pessimistic.
Are you seeing changes in what sort of commodities that are being moved around the world? I'm thinking in terms of in, say, Europe, you've probably got a more established, mature market, older population, but you've got much younger populations in other parts of the world. So are you seeing a real change in the sort of commodities that you're shipping around the world?
in fairness, not that much. I think the commodity mix is reasonably stable. It's a little bit like what we mentioned earlier about talking around nearshoring and bringing things back home. And there are some changes that one sees, but it's really not all that much, which in a way is also logical, you know, because in the end, it's all driven by the difference in factor and production costs. And in many cases, also based on the availability of raw materials. And that drives the flows much more than the things that you just referred to.
When you're looking at new markets, where the potential is that driven by you? Do you see potential? Is it your customers? Is it people coming along to you and saying, oh, we think we've got, you know, we think we've got a market here. You should open up, come to this port or that port. I mean, how does it all happen?
I mean, of course, in the end, people sometimes ask us whether we want to call certain markets, and they ask for sure other shipping lines as well. But in the end, that doesn't really drive growth. I mean, in the end, it is where is manufacturing being done, yeah, and where is demand? I mean, take the chemical industry, right? You would always go to a place where feedstock is relatively cheap. Yeah, that's why the Middle East traditionally is so important in that market. Mm-hmm. That's also why you now see that the US has been coming up. I mean, that's what drives it. And then in the end, port capacity is typically being created because it needs to be exported or imported for that matter. And then we deploy the ships accordingly, and so do many others.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, right now, it's pretty difficult times with sanctions and tariffs. How do you respond, or how do your customers cope with tariffs, especially in the US when they were fluctuating so often? Who is actually responsible for sorting out who pays them?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think we've seen, especially last year, of course, a lot of changes in tariff regimes, and we still see some also this year. I think people, meantime, by and large, take a let's wait and see type of approach. Whenever there's a change, we react, but there's not a lot of people that try to be ahead of the curve or take very drastic decisions, because I think we've all learned by now that these things are unpredictable, and trying to outsmart or to predict what politicians are going to do is just very, very difficult. And I think last year we saw a lot of volatility and a lot of spikes in demand. That's actually been a lot less, yeah, at least not due to this in the last couple of quarters.
Now, every so often we hear about alternatives to ocean transport, with rail transport. There's always in the past been the option of the Trans-Siberian railways, and now we've got problems in the Middle East, so you're having to use trucks more and maybe some railways. But do you see railroads in particular perhaps taking away some of the market from ocean transport?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm personally a bit skeptical about that, probably for a couple of reasons. The first one is cost. I mean, cost is just a lot higher if you want to move stuff over rail than if you can move it via the water. Of course, rail capacity is important for inland destinations that can't be reached all that easy, yeah, via ports. But I think that that's the main role that rail and also trucking will continue to play. I mean, if you look at the crisis we see now in the Middle East, yes, now we see a lot of cargo that's being moved into Oman or into Saudi and then being trucked on to some countries in the Upper Gulf. But the cost of doing that is 3 or 4 times what it used to be if you move it via the water. So as soon as that will be possible again, I think that, you know, efficiency, that the fact that it's so much more efficient to do it over the water will mean that most of it will go back to how it was before.
Now, I'm struck by how optimistic you are about growth prospects. And I hadn't really expected that. I thought you might be a little bit more gloomy about the future, but it's good to hear that things are looking promising. But growth has also been able to come through mergers and acquisitions. And obviously, Hapag-Lloyd has been active over the past 20 years in buying or merging with other companies. So is that also still the route to go?
I mean, you know, if anything, I think we will still look for options to gain some scale. I mean, you know that we signed a merger agreement with Zim. Yeah, we think that's a company with a very similar strategy to ours. Yeah, very similar philosophy in terms of the way they work. I mean, they can add something to what we are doing. They can probably learn something from what we are doing. So together, I believe that we could be better than what we are each on our own. And I think whenever you see those type of opportunities, you should look at it. Because in a market like this, scale matters. I think we have seen that over a long time. And that means that if we look out for another 5 or 10 or 15 years, then we certainly need to continue to look for ways to build a little bit more scale. And also, if you look back, we have a good track record when you look at what we did with CG Ships, what we did with CZV, UASC, and also a couple of smaller ones.
No, you've grown a lot through mergers and acquisitions, and hopefully we can talk about that on another occasion, because I find that really interesting. But so if we can look, say, 5-10 years ahead, you seem very optimistic that container shipping will continue to grow and will continue to basically power the global economy.
I'm optimistic about that. And I think, you know, I've always been cautiously optimistic about that ever since I joined Hapag. And I would also say that if you now look back on the last 10 or 12 years, then at least until now, we were definitely right. Yeah, because when you look at the growth of the cargo volume, particularly out of Asia, particularly out on some of those dominant legs, then volume is a lot higher these days than it was 10 or 12 years ago. And when you just look at some of those fundamentals, some markets that can still grow a lot more, like the Indias, the South Americas, the Africas of this world, the fact that there will be more people that will be lifted out of poverty, so many people in those markets will gain wealth. And I think there's still a lot that will come. And I would not be surprised that if we would talk again in 10 years or so from today, that we find out that the total volume that's being moved is probably a bit higher than what many people anticipate at this point in time. And let me still come back to that one point that I made earlier, which is about efficiency. I mean, if you go 15 years back, then a lot of the containers were stuffed with an efficiency of maybe 75% or so. Today, that's well above 90. So you see that the cube utilization is a lot better today than what it was probably 15 or 20 years ago. That also hides some growth, if you want, because that means we just move more cargo in the same boxes. And the same goes for packaging. I mean, if you look at televisions, is always my favorite example. If you look at televisions 10 years ago, you could maybe do 6 on a pallet. Today, you can probably put 30, or so on a pallet. That's also growth in terms of volume or in terms of value and in terms of goods that are being moved that you don't see so much in the cubes that are being moved. And we're starting to reach a little bit the limit of what one can do there. Now, if you want to have a very big TV screen, you cannot package it much smaller than you do today. There's not that much to be gained anymore. Same goes in a way for mobile phones. They're a lot, smaller today than they were 15 or 20 years ago. And I think that's another factor that has resulted in relatively low growth in terms of volume over a certain period of time. But it's a factor that doesn't play that much of a role anymore today. So that's another reason why I'm probably cautiously optimistic when you look ahead into the next 3, 4, 5, but certainly 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't really thought about the packaging aspect. What about vehicles? There's always been attempts in the past to load some maybe higher value vehicles, cars into containers, but I'm never quite sure whether it was success. Are cars being shipped by container?
It's certainly one of those commodities that's really booming these days. If you just look at how many EVs are being transported these days via containers, it's a lot. Yeah. And it's also one of those where if you go back 5 years or 10 years, then there were two categories that were always moved in containers, which was secondhand cars, and it was also very expensive cars. But everything which was mainstream typically would be done by car carriers. Of course, those also have a somewhat limited capacity. And especially if you see the transition from traditional vehicles to EVs, I would not be surprised if that's a commodity that will also help to boost growth rates over the years to come. If you look at companies like BYD and others, and you just see how much they produce and how much they export, that alone has already those companies alone have a material impact on cargo flows around the globe.
Now that's really interesting. Now I just want to ask you one particular question. I've always thought the container shipping was a force for good. It helped to spread prosperity around the world. You've brought countries that couldn't really afford to trade before into the global network because of affordable ocean transport. But I've also been myself feel conflicted because we all have too much stuff. We all buy too much stuff. And it's partly because it's all being shipped around the world and we're all buying things and throwing things away, which is not good for the global, for the environment. Do you ever yourself feel conflicted about that?
Not so much because, no, first of all, I don't, I'm probably not one of the biggest buyers myself of all that stuff. So that's okay. On the other hand, you know, these are also phases that, that one goes through. I think you see in a place like Northern Europe where people are very aware of these type of things and people already have a lot of stuff, of course, then that starts to play a bigger role. But if you go to Africa or if you go to India, yeah, or also to some places in South America or in Southeast Asia where people do not have a washing machine and where they do not have a television or a bicycle, you know, their perspective on that is probably a little different than ours here in Hamburg or in London for that matter. And I think when you look at our business, which is a truly global business, then I still feel that, you know, helping some of those people in those countries to get access to some of those things is actually a good thing.
Yes, no, I totally agree with that. I was thinking more the more mature markets we are, you know, whether it's North America or Europe, we mostly have more than we need. But you're quite right. Obviously, we're the lucky ones and many don't have as much. So plenty of scope for you.
Yeah, and even here, you see that, you know, people here will also move to EVs and you see still see a lot of things changing here as well. So from that perspective, I don't think that demand into Europe and North America will dry up. But the real growth will come from other markets where today well, the level of containerization is just very, very low. And also a lot of wealth can still be accumulated in many families over the next decades.
Well, Rolf, it's been great talking to you again. Thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. You're very welcome. It was nice talking to you again. Yeah, and hope to speak again soon.
Straight Talk with Rolf Habben-Jansen.